This is Barbara Ridenour, returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 21st, 2015. We'll continue with the obituaries. Okay. Lillian N. Atkins, 92, of Decatur, died Wednesday, August 19th, 2015. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 22nd, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation 1 hour prior to service time at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. June E. Baker, 98, of Camargo, Illinois, died Wednesday, August 19, 2015. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, August 22nd, in the Joins Funeral Home, Illinois Route 130 South, Villa Grove. Visitation will be held 1 hour before the services in the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Camargo United Methodist Church. James Michael Bilyeu, 70, of Fairfield Bay, Arkansas, formerly of Decatur, died Monday, August 3, 2015. Memorial service will be held at noon on Saturday, August 29th, at the First Baptist Church in Decatur. A lunch reception will follow the service. Interment will be private and will be held at the Bilyeu Family Cemetery in Mohegan, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the First Baptist Church, Decatur. James E. Jim Davis, 82, of Assumption, died August 18, 2015. Private family graveside service will be held in Pleasant View Cemetery, Assumption. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. today in the First United Methodist Church of Assumption. Seats Funeral Home, or Sites Funeral Home, Assumption, is in charge of services and arrangements. Sandra K. Gross, 65, of Decatur, died Tuesday, August 18, 2015. Funeral services to celebrate her life will be at 11 a.m. Monday, August 24th, in Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday in the funeral home. Burial will be in the Fairlawn Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Davida Dialysis. Richard H. Schultz, 71, of Decatur, formerly of Normal, died Wednesday, August 19, 2015. Funeral service was held at 2 p.m. today at Beck Memorial Home, Bloomington. Burial is at Evergreen Memorial Cemetery in Bloomington. Visitation was from noon to 2 p.m. today. Memorials may be made to Decatur Cancer Care Center in Decatur. We'll continue now with turning to the editorial page and continue with letters to the editor. Public needs the truth about gasoline prices. So, we've been told that a refinery fire in Indiana is responsible for the spike in oil prices in the Midwest. Yet I know from reliable sources that the gas we get in this area primarily comes from a different refinery. We've had news agencies tell us that this is the cause and effect that is now costing people in Decatur $2.99 per gallon, while the price of gasoline on the New York Mercantile Exchange was $1.71 per gallon, according to the August 14th Herald and Review. So, just one question. When is someone in the news business actually going to do some hard research on the reasons for this? Why are news agencies content to just take the oil company's reason without researching the truth? Signed, Arliss DeJanes, Forsyth. Abandoned buildings being ignored by the city. In a city where hundreds of boarded houses sit unattended, it is people like me who get threatening letters from the city. We have what once was a drug house that we worked for the past 2 years to make livable and no longer an eyesore, at least in the eyes of my neighbors, but I guess not to the city inspector. I had a flat tire being repaired on my motor home, so the letter said I was repairing cars. I had the home pulled to the side of the road and two tires on my yard, and that was called parking on the grass. I had the hood up on my pickup, and that was noted. I have brand new air conditioning unit on my porch awaiting installations, and they cited that as junk. Yet the abandoned buildings are ignored. A recent visitor joked that the boarded-up houses make the city look like Detroit. With a busy train track just 43 feet from the corner of our house, we ask for a short wall to bounce the sound off. The railroad and city pointed at each other, but it never happened. The bolts on our TV vibrated out of the wall, sending it crashing to the floor as a result of train traffic. This letter was the last straw. It is understandable why a recent publication showed Decatur as one of the 10 worst cities to live in Illinois. We, too, will move and join the exodus from Decatur. Signed, Mike Norpal, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to Shop with a Cop Back to School, which helped more than 70 area children get school supplies and other necessities purchased. The event was sponsored by the Police Benevolent and Protective Association of Decatur, Unit 39, which is made up of active and retired Decatur police officers. The association raised about $7,000 for the effort, which was held at the Kohl's store in Forsyth Hickory Point Mall. The children that participated were recommended by the Decatur School District, or Big Brother Big Sisters of Macon County. Thumbs up to the Decatur Family YMCA's 5th Annual Backpack Giveaway, which provided backpacks and school supplies to 2,300 area children. The backpack attack was held Saturday with some people and some people were willing to get in line as early as 90 minutes before the event. The backpacks filled with school supplies were part of the several events at the Y, ushering in the new school year. Thumbs up to the Tour de Paws, which benefits the Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation and the Scoville Zoo. This year's event saw the largest number of riders ever, about 175, and also featured demonstrations from different dogs and their owners. The event was held in Decatur's Nelson Park. Thumbs up to the Blue Mound Fall Festival, which had a successful event last weekend, just like it has for the last 105 years. The festival, a small-town celebration at its best, highlighted a couple of new things this year. One was a collection of sneakers for the Soles for Shoes anti-poverty nonprofit made in the memory of Danny R. Byard, an avid runner, teacher, and Vietnam veteran who died suddenly. The organizers hope to collect 1,100 pairs of shoes. Also, the event featured tours of the Meridian Middle School building, which will be torn down in the near future. Thumbs up to the trunk drive held last week that sent about 24 local students off to college with some of the necessities for living away from home. The drive was organized by Decatur Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley, along with help from the Black Chamber of Commerce and Rebirth of Black Decatur, and was held at the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur. The result of the effort was that the students left for college with a trunk packed with linens, cleaning supplies, personal hygiene products, and more. Thumbs up to the annual back-to-school party held by Big Brothers Big Sisters of Macon County last week at the Fairview Pool. The annual event is a chance for all of those associated with Big Brothers Big Sisters to have fun. Welcome to a new school year event. Editorial from the Washington Post, The Importance of Males in School Achievement. Dear dads, it's your time to shine. Everyone knows that kids do better academically when parents participate in school activities, such as helping with homework and teacher conferences. But all too often, moms are designated the school stuff managers, leaving out a precious piece of the puzzle for ensuring that kids understand how important their education is to the whole family. Maybe not for long. The Black Star Project, a Chicago-based nonprofit organization that strives to improve the quality of life in Black and Latino communities by closing racial academic achievement gaps, has been getting dads involved in back-to-school preparations for more than a decade. The Million Father March is a way to get men into their children's schools, because right now men are the missing link in education, said Philip Jackson, the founder and executive director of the Black Star Project. When fathers, grandfathers, uncles, foster fathers, stepfathers, big brothers, significant male caregivers, and male friends of the family come together to support a child's education, they bring so much to schools and to families. It's amazing that we haven't figured out how to get more men involved in the education of children. The idea for the Million Father March began in a church basement as a group of Black and Hispanic men on the south side of Chicago pondered how best to help their kids succeed in the dire circumstances of the inner city. They combined the community rallying power of the 1995 Million Man March with the South American village tradition of having fathers take children to school on the last day of classes to thank the teachers, like principals, and everyone else who had a role in educating their children, and applied it to the first day as a symbol of year-long commitment and involvement. In Chicago and many other urban school districts, it's difficult to get all eligible students to convene for the first day of school, which is especially important for starting the academic part of the year, and because opening day attendance is closely linked to school funding formulas. But since 2004, when the Million Father March was launched in Chicago, it has played a pivotal role in getting kids to school on the first day. In its second year alone, between 25,000 and 35,000 fathers participated in the Million Father March, contributing to a then-record 92% first-day attendance for Chicago public schools, and because of the fuller classrooms, school funding has jumped by a total of nearly $100 million. Today, the Million Father March takes place in schools and communities across the country and beyond. This fall, the Black Star Project estimates that more than 1 million fathers and other family members will participate in more than 600 cities. The Million Father March is no longer a one-day activity, Jackson told me. It did start out that way, but now it's a full-year activity that asks men and fathers to volunteer 10 hours a year to their child's school. To some people, that's nothing, but it's such a great beginning once they see they can be tutors, mentors, celebrity readers, real men readers, lunchroom monitors, field trip chaperones, that they can be put to painting and improving the school. They see there are so many things that fathers can do. Jackson continued, "The second thing we ask fathers to commit to is reading to their young children for 30 minutes a week. A lot of people say, what's that going to do? That's exactly the point. It is nothing. But to set a time to get children to see the value of reading, that is invaluable. And if their kids are older children, we ask dads to have their children read to them for 30 minutes a week. Jackson believes in the power of the whole family to boost educational achievement for Black and Hispanic youth, and says the emphasis on dads is just another way to improve participation. Education is absolutely a family affair. It is not, as we used to believe, the mother's job, said Jackson. It's so much more than that now. The family that educates together elevates together. You cannot simply send your child to school anymore. It never really worked, and it doesn't work in 2015. Hear it loud and clear, dads. You are wanted and needed at school. Dear Abby, returning lost pet is the right thing to do. Dear Abby, A man I work with found a dog on his way to the office. He picked it up, took it home, and was immediately talking about what a good playmate the dog would make. He said he tried to call the local animal shelter, but was put on hold twice, so he gave up. I felt he should have made more of an attempt to find the owner before claiming it as his own. I immediately posted a free found a dog ad online, and 3 weeks later received a message. It turned out the dog belonged to a 72-year-old woman who lives alone. She discovered her back door open one day and her dog missing. I put my coworker in touch with the lady and said I'd leave it to him to do what he felt was best. After confirming the dog was indeed hers, he reluctantly returned it to her. Now he's telling everyone he's very sad at his loss, and that was almost as hard as having a dog put to sleep. He's receiving major sympathy from some of our coworkers who seem to be upset with me for posting the dog found dog ad. Am I wrong to think this small effort should have been expected in this situation, and what I did was the right thing? Signed, did the right thing in Texas. Dear Did, I don't think you did anything wrong, and I'm 100% positive that the dog's owner would agree with me. She was probably worried sick, wondering if her beloved companion was lying injured or dead in a ditch somewhere. While I appreciate your co-worker's feeling a sense of loss at having to return the dog, he should be comforted in the knowledge that it's in a home where it is loved and cared for. And that is not comparable to having to have one euthanized. However, because he is grieving, suggest he ask the owner for visitation. Out of gratitude, she may agree. Partner's label. Dear Abby, I've been with my partner, Pat, for 10 years. For personal reasons, we have chosen not to get married. I call him my partner because for the majority of our 10 years together, we have lived together. We share multiple financial commitments, and he is truly my partner in life. My problem is when I refer to Pat as my partner, people immediately ask me if I'm gay. I'm less worried about people thinking I might be a lesbian, but more that people might think Pat is a woman. Even his family members have remarked when I refer to him as my partner. I know our friends and family respect our choice not to be married, but I'm not sure what to call him, other than my partner. I feel boyfriend is too casual for our level of commitment. I don't have a problem calling Pat my partner. I do have a problem with all the unnecessary confusion that follows. What should I call the man I'm committed to and who is equally committed to me when we have chosen to take the no-ring route together? Signed, Not Single in St. Louis. Dear Not Single, you could use better half, but I think the word partner describes your relationship very well. If someone asks if you are gay or if Pat is a woman, don't be defensive. Just say no. Giving more information to someone who isn't close enough to you is it to you already? Be aware of your situation. Is oversharing. On Biz, Mark Vision Care, Mark's Floors, First Mid-Illinois Bank Shares. Dr. Mark Sarmiento, optometrist, has announced plans to close his practice, Mark Vision Care, effective August 31st. Sarmiento has been practicing in Decatur for 12 years, most recently at his office at 2705 North Water Street. The loyalty and friendship my patients have shown me over the years is very much appreciated, Sarmiento said. They are like members of my family, and I will miss them greatly. He also had high praise for his staff. Sarmiento will be joining Bard Optical and serving patients in Pekin and East Peoria. Files in his Decatur patients will be transferred to Bard Optical at 1351 Hickory Point Drive, Suite B in Forsyth. Friends and patients are invited to stop by his Water Street office from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday, August 28th, to say goodbye and enjoy some refreshments. Best wishes to all for your future eye health and vision care, he said. Mark's Floors in Shelbyville is rolling out the red carpet for its customers with a major new expansion. A recent addition to the flooring store has expanded the combined warehouse and showroom areas by some 75%. Owner Mark Nugent says that means more room to display and browse carpet and vinyl floor coverings and a selection of hardwood floors. The business, located on Illinois 16 West, across from the Shelby County Airport, has been open 2 years. Nugent said sales are going well and he's pulling in customers from a wide area. His business offers free estimates and measuring, and brand names like Mohawk, Congolium, and Beaulieu. Mark's Floors is open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. First Mid Illinois Bank Shares Incorporated, the company of First Mid Illinois Bank and Trust, has completed its acquisition of 12 Southern Illinois banking centers from Old National Bank Corp. It's as of August 17th, the branches in Carbondale, DeSoto, Murfreesboro, Mount Vernon, Lawrenceville, Harrisburg, Mount Carmel, Carmi, Carterville, and Marion, acquired from Old National Bank, began operating as First Mid-Illinois Bank and Trust. We are continually looking for ways to expand banking products and services to our customers, and moving into the southern region greatly improves the overall service area of our customers, said Joe Dively, First Mid Chairman and CEO. We welcome our new employees and customers to First Mid and look forward to maintaining strong relationships and involvement in these communities, he said. With the completion of this acquisition, First Mid will have 47 banking centers and 57 ATMs across Illinois. This growth expands its overall service area and offers customers banking capabilities in 33 Illinois communities. Now for entertainment. Aussie bluesman finds comforts of home in America. Although blues musician Michael Charles was born and raised in Australia, he calls America home. He had made his mark in his home country, so he thought he would try to make it in the States. I had a really good career in Australia, but I wanted to push my limits, he said. I had done most of the things I wanted to there, and I liked challenges. That was almost 30 years ago, and he still loves the challenge. Charles will be performing at 3 p.m. Sunday, August 23rd, at Pop's Place, 4335 West Main Street. Charles didn't plan on staying in the States. Buddy Guy and his management brought me out, he said. I thought I would test the waters, and it seems to have worked. Charles still finds himself popular with blues audiences in both countries, but I'm quite lucky to be part of the blues scene in Chicago, he said. According to his publicist, Jane Roberts, Charles has worked the whole Chicago blues circuit, performing with Buddy Guy, Phil Guy, James Cotton, Eddie Clearwater, Junior Wells, and George Bays, as well as touring with blues legend Jimmy Dawkins, along with gracing countless stages and pages, including Chicago Blues Fest, Philadelphia Jazz and Blues Fest, Windy City Live, Television, WGN-TV, JBTV, the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, and the College Network Journal, she said. He found popularity in America, but had left a lucrative career in Australia. Charles began his career when he was 5 years old and with his father's guitar and guidance. I was very young, but it just set me up for the rest of my life, he said. By the time he was 14 years old, he had appeared on his first television show. Like many teenagers in the 1960s, Charles grew up in a rock and roll era, listening to the Beatles, Rolling Stones, and the Yardbirds. We were influenced by what we were fed on radio and newspapers, he said. They were all heavily blues-influenced. As years have gone by, Charles began to view himself as more American than Australian now, but I still tour there, he said. His current tour will allow him the opportunity to visit his native country again, as well as other parts of the United States and Canada. Although he's happy to play in all venues, Charles can see a difference in the crowds. The Australian audiences are more reserved. They aren't as rowdy, he said. But a good audience is a good audience. He's going to... It's blues artist Michael Charles, 3 p.m. Sunday, August 23rd, at Pop's Place, 4335 West Main Street in Decatur, and the cost is free. Decatur Christian Fundraiser features Broadway stars, downtown dining. The Lincoln Theater will turn downtown Decatur into Broadway at 7:30 p.m. on November 7th, when Brian Noonan, star of Phantom of the Opera and The Unexpected Boy, the top four seasons tribute act to the in the world, perform at a benefit for Decatur Christian School. Every performer has significant Broadway experience, said David Kozinski, president and CEO of Investment Planners Incorporated and IPI Wealth Management Incorporated. Kozinski's daughter, Julie Hovis, director of marketing, events, and communications for the firm, has long had a dream to create an event like this. She books the company's events, and Noonan has been a guest in the past. He also accompanied Kozinski to Decatur Celebration this year. We've wanted to bring him into Decatur for years, Hovis said. We wanted to bring the downtown businesses into it and sort of do a dinner with the downtown businesses participating. So they're going to give a percentage back to the school. Participating restaurants will have a window card and tent cards on the tables, and patrons can present the tickets if eating prior to the show or program if they eat afterward, to ensure a portion of their bill will also benefit the school. Kozinski hopes the event will also help spur the downtown revitalization that's underway and inspire others to plan events that will get people downtown and make it a destination for dinner and an evening out, he said. Decatur Christian School Administrator Randy Grigg and the school's said the school's enrollment this year is 240, and a significant number of those families need scholarship assistance. The money raised will go toward that scholarship fund, and the hope is that this can be an annual event. We've never had a secular venue, Grigg said. This is a way to kind of reach into the community with a kind of secular, family-oriented event. Decatur Christian students represent 66 churches, but the school depends on donors and fundraising to meet the expenses, he said. The wonderful thing about our show is surprises, Noonan said. Not only are you surprised with the talent in our all-Broadway roster, but the way in which we engage with our audience. The music of the Four Seasons mixed in with Broadway, and the way that we unveil it with a kind of Jersey wise guy antics, is very clean and it's very fun. The way they do that, Noonan said, is they've created a storyline that weaves the songs together cohesively and includes some audience participation. Have no fear of bringing the family because it's all suitable for any age. Tickets are on sale now, $25 for general admission and $40 for reserve seating, with 1,200 seats available in the renovated Lincoln. Visit www.lincolnsquaretheater.com or www.decaturarts.org or call 217-706-5229. That's 706-5229. Hovis suggests making dinner reservations early, too. We hope every place is packed, she said. Weather indicator, it's right now 78 degrees. Humidity is 46%, feels like 79 degrees. Heat index is 79. Winds are south-southwest at 12 miles an hour. UV index is very high. Sunrise is at 6:13:37 a.m. and sunset is at 7:44:08 p.m. Dew point is 56 degrees. Sun and clouds mixed, high of 82 today, winds from the south-southeast at 5 to 10 miles an hour, clear skies tonight, low of 57, winds southeast 5 to 10 miles an hour, tomorrow generally sunny despite a few afternoon clouds, high of 84. This has been Barbara Weidenauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 21st, 2015. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a pleasant weekend and week to follow.